From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA.
It's been a long time coming. But tonight, because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America.
Equality in America. The election of Barack Obama to the highest office in the land is without a doubt a huge step towards achieving that goal. But no one thinks the work is done. On today's program, we'll take a look at the role Latinos may play in an Obama administration.
We help them get elected, and we also expect them to include us as real partners in this transformation of America that he's talking about.
And the 2008 Latin Grammy Awards. This and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. Joining us to discuss the news affecting the Latino community this week is María Elena Salinas, national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. Well, María Elena, there's a lot of news affecting Latinos around this time with a new president-elect, Barack Obama. So what do you think that an Obama administration could potentially offer for Latinos?
Quite a bit of things, and hopefully it will offer or will keep the promise he made to us here at Univision during an interview to get an immigration reform bill passed in his first year in office. That's certainly one of the issues that was driving the Latino vote. Of course, besides the economy and the promise to provide health insurance to all, that's according to Univision's Sogbi and Reuters poll. But, you know, Latinos also expect President-elect Obama to end the war in Iraq like he promised, to bring the troops back home. And, you know, the Latino vote, Maria, proved to be very significant. It's going to take a couple of weeks of analyzing all the data. But at first glance, there's several organizations that have put the Latino voter turnout at about 10 million, and that really exceeds expectations. There were expected 9.2 million voters were expected to go to the polls on November 4th, and 10 million would definitely exceed those expectations. Now, let's remember that 7.6 million voted in 2004, so it's a significant increase. Now, this time around, they gave Obama a big, huge vote of confidence, especially in states like Nevada, Colorado, and surprisingly, in Florida. In Florida, Maria, he got 57% of the Latino vote.
When I saw that statistic, 57% of the Latino vote in Florida, that was probably one of the ones where my jaw dropped.
And it just shows you how demographics are changing all around the country, but in Florida in particular, where the Cuban-American vote no longer has the same type of influence that it did in the past. And that's because of the influx of more Central Americans and Puerto Ricans into Florida, and of course, the younger generation Cubans that are also being politically active.
So when I say the words to you, Colorado, Nuevo México, and Nevada, you know, just by saying it in that way, in Spanish, you're saying something about the fact that these three states were carried essentially by the Latino vote, by the increase in Latino voters who were registered and getting out to the polls.
In big numbers. In Nevada, for example, 76% of Latinos voted for Barack Obama, 73% in Colorado. And these are states that were carried by George Bush in 2004. So, you know, someone was commenting that Barack Obama would have won the election even without Colorado and Nevada and Florida. But the fact is that he did win those states, and that those were states that were won by George Bush. So they helped him, if not maybe win the total the presidency. They certainly helped them win those particular states. And there's one thing that we have to remember. Latinos can no longer give their vote away in exchange for empty promises. So I'm sure that they're going to be expecting something in return. Immigration reform, you know, approval to the DREAM Act, and hopefully some Latinos named to key positions in his administration.
All right, well, looking forward, María Elena, let's just talk about some of the things that you've mentioned. Let's just talk about the DREAM Act, for example. As a president, what in fact could Barack Obama do in regards specifically to the DREAM Act? Not as a senator, but as a president.
Well, we all know that a president cannot make laws, but we have to remember that now the Democrats have a mandate and they have a lot of political capital to spend. And we want to see if they're going to spend any of that capital with issues that affect the Hispanic community. So Barack Obama now needs to show that he can be a president for all the people, like he said, the night of the election, where he said, for those of you who did not vote for me, I hear your voice and I want to be your president also. He needs to show that he can work with both parties and get some of this legislation approved, and that he's able to have a little bit more influence within his own party in Congress than George Bush did with Republicans during his last term.
Maria Elena, there were some allegations, including, lawsuits involving the ACLU and MALDEF, the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund, asserting that members of the Republican Party in New Mexico, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, intimidated voters and made public private information such as Social Security numbers. But is there a story behind the story that we need to be looking at as journalists?
This is not the first time there's accusations of voter fraud or intimidation. It's been happening quite a bit in the last few elections. It's also not the first time where there are lawsuits claiming voter intimidation, so I don't know how far it's going to get. They have not been that successful in the past. Besides, the allegations come from both sides. Neither one of them can say that their hands are completely clean from some of this inappropriate behavior in the political process.
Maria Elena Salinas, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Maria.
Maria Elena Salinas is the national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
Hello, Chicago. If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, who still questions the power of our democracy, tonight is your answer.
Barack Obama's election is a historic moment in the long struggle for equal rights in this country. But it's by no means the end of that struggle. Latinos and African Americans still suffer disparities in income, home ownership, education, and health care. So what role will Latinos play in President Obama's administration? To answer that question and many others, we're joined by Angelo Falcón, president of the National Institute for Latino Policy, based in New York City. Do you think that America is now colorblind? Is it an equal society?
No. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at the newspapers every day and you see the problem of all the racial disparities in so many areas, the lack of blacks, Latinos in so many spheres in this society. No, it's still a problem. The question is now, with Obama as president, we're going to have to reframe the way we talk about civil rights issues. But the problems are still there. So the hope is that when everybody makes reference to Obama's big ears, that his big ears will be big enough to listen to voices of people that he knows have legitimate grievances, legitimate issues, and that Obama may be the person to complete that civil rights revolution that we started in the 60s, and that's a good thing, just as his election is being framed as a good thing for not just African Americans, but for all Americans. I think that's the same argument.
What will we see in terms of Latinos in key posts in the Obama administration?
The one Latino that's being named a lot is Bill Richardson, is possibly Secretary of State or some type of position, not just because he's Latino, because he's probably one of the most qualified people in terms of international affairs, foreign affairs that we have. And at the same time, I think the Latino leadership, no matter what anybody says, has got to push. We have to be able to tell this new administration that, you know, we helped them get elected, and we also expect them to include us, not as political patronage, but as real partners in this transformation of America that he's talking about.
Many of his most fervent supporters are working-class African-Americans and Latinos. Can they expect social programs that will benefit, let's say, them in terms of health care or education?
I'm not a believer that you could just take one issue area and say, well, the most important thing is education. The most important thing is housing. A kid can maybe go to a really nice school, but if the kid, has bad health and there isn't doesn't have health insurance, he may not make it to school that many days to enjoy that. And then, in fact, this federal government has programs, initiatives in all sorts of different areas. And we just need to be involved, get some of our best people in there who understand the community to be a part of the process. process of designing what hopefully will be a restructured federal government.
Do you think that there are any potential policies that, let's say, at some point were essentially a shot in the dark and now they actually seem plausible?
It's hard to tell because the problem is that, you know, with the fact that we're financing two wars and funding these corporations at an unbelievable amount of money as well. So the question is where he's going to get the resources for these things. One of the issues that's a top issue for Latino leaders is around the issue of immigration reform. But that's such a controversial issue. It'll be interesting to see how he raises that one. Does he want to kind of stir up those kinds of controversies early on or what? There are a lot of things out there. The continuing problem of underrepresentation, affirmative action, and federal government jobs. My hope, and the hope of a lot of people, I think, is that, in fact, he will usher in a period where there'll be more inclusion, that they will be able to sit down and actually come up with a workable strategy, something that makes sense, where hopefully the Latino community will be part of those strategies and the Obama people will bring our community along in developing those strategies as opposed to some sort of symbolic actions on his part.
Angelo Falcón is the president of the National Institute for Latino Policy.
Y ahora algo un poco más personal.
Yes, I cried at 11 p.m. Eastern Time when I saw that the presidency had been delivered to Barack Obama. But in a lot of ways, the tears had to do with an accumulation of exhaustion and stress. They were also tears of relief. I was going to be able to go to bed early, knowing who would be our next president. But as I watched the tens of thousands of people file into Grant Park in Chicago, there was a whole other emotion going on. Though I was born in Mexico City, I'm a Chicago-raised girl. In fact, Barack Obama lives in the neighborhood where I grew up. Hyde Park was this oasis in the, oh, rough and tumble south side of Chicago. My friends growing up were Jewish and Asian and African-American from my public school. They were the sons and daughters of intellectuals and of the working class of Chicago. I've thought a lot about my Hyde Park neighborhood since Barack Obama became the nominee, because it is such a racially diverse place in the heart of Black Chicago. The truth is that people like my family and Barack Obama's made a very real choice to live there. So I asked my 80-year-old dad why he had made the decision to move his family from Mexico to this neighborhood. Yes, he was working as a doctor at the University of Chicago, and it was convenient. But then my dad told his story of his very first trip to Chicago by bus in the mid-1950s, all the way from Mexico. When he got off the bus someplace in Texas for a rest stop, my dad confronted something he had never seen in Mexico: bathrooms for whites and others for colored people. My dad never had to make this decision before, and it broke his heart. Hyde Park didn't have those racially divided markers. Hyde Park was where my other tío, my uncle, a writer, had chosen to live with his Black Panamanian wife, because in Hyde Park in the 1950s, no one thought that a biracial marriage was something strange. So I cried a few tears for Hyde Park on Tuesday night. This multi-culti oasis isn't an oasis any longer. It's the center of the world. But just to be clear, I got to Hyde Park first, way before Barack, and my parents still call Hyde Park home. For many Americans, Barack Obama's election proves that the American dream is still attainable, even by those with the most humble beginnings. Until recently, tens of thousands of undocumented immigrants also attained a piece of that dream. They bought their American homes. In fact, banks who made those mortgages say these undocumented immigrants have been among their better investments. But now, with increasing immigration rates and the financial crisis, that's all coming to an abrupt halt. And some in the real estate business wonder who's going to take the place of these willing buyers in the marketplace. From California, Nancy Mullane has our story.
Pedro Morlet is a successful real estate broker in Danville, California. He says the secret to his success is cooking for his clients.
Mole, or I will make green enchiladas or red enchiladas. So it's traditional Mexican food. I'm from Mexico City. It's just a way to connect.
4 years ago, the bilingual real estate broker says he discovered that undocumented immigrants could qualify for mortgages. So he took out ads in the local paper and visited nearby factories.
When they're having lunch, it's like, you know, I'm Pedro, I'm a realtor, and I just want to let you know that if you know someone that has an interest and they don't understand the system and they would like to have somebody that can guide them and can help them buy a home legally, they can give me a call. And when they know it's like, I don't have a social, like, we can still do it legally, they immediately, you know, when I hear about it, they perk up and they start telling everybody else. So it's greatly by word of mouth.
When Morlett set up an informational meeting with about 20 interested home buyers, one man didn't show up. So Morlett called the man on his cell phone.
And I went outside and I called him. I'm like, where are you, Hector? And he's like, well, I just want to make sure that there's no agents. I'm here by myself. What are you talking about? Get over here. He was behind me in the parking lot where he could see me, but I couldn't. He was very nervous, but he understood that he was not going to get raided.
That meeting was the first of many. Since then, Morlett has become a bit of a specialist in helping undocumented immigrants in the area find homes and mortgages. He says they now represent 10% of his portfolio and are wonderful borrowers. They put cash down, get 20 to 30-year fixed mortgages, and pay their bills.
They're illegal, but they're paying their taxes. They're looking forward to paying their taxes because that makes them feel part of society.
People living in the U.S. without documentation can't get Social Security numbers, but through the Internal Revenue Service, they can get ITINs, or Individual Taxpayer Identification Numbers. The IRS issues them so the federal government can collect their taxes. Those ITIN numbers have made it possible for hundreds of thousands of undocumented immigrants to get checking accounts, build credit, and buy houses.
We are in communities where almost 50% of our residents are undocumented.
Mark Doyle is president and CEO of Second Federal Savings in Chicago. Over the past 4 years, he says his bank has originated more than $120 million in ITIN mortgages, loans that he says have been performing well.
I think there's every reason to believe that this community means a lot to the housing market. And the best way to serve our community is to help them buy homes. And yes, we make money off of that. If we didn't, we wouldn't be able to survive.
But now that community is facing tough times. In recent months, the economy has taken a downturn, and the federal government has increased their raids on undocumented people living in the U.S., targeting workplaces and homes. As a result, Doyle says some of these borrowers may be having trouble keeping up with their mortgage payments.
People are, you know, feeling the pressure of the federal government now, and many municipalities are giving police departments the authority to pull people over and arrest them. You know, I think that's causing a problem for a lot of our borrowers as well.
Unless Congress and President-elect Barack Obama pass immigration reform legislation, Sandoz says immigrant buying power will remain untapped, further jeopardizing the future of the U.S. housing market.
Until there is a final solution on immigration reform, I think that most financial institutions are going to shun the political risk and reputational risk that comes with providing these types of loans.
Even though undocumented immigrants are now having trouble finding these loans, according to Tim Sandoz, ITIN mortgage holders have had a much lower default rate, less than one-half of 1%. Compare that to the overall mortgage default rate of 6.4% nationally. For Latino USA, I'm Nancy Mullane.
In a minute, lo mejor de la música latina, a review of this year's nominees for the Latin Grammys. Coming up on Latino USA, no se vayan.
Thank you.
You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Some of you may be going through an election news withdrawal. I know I am. So in order to cure our blues, we wanted to offer you a report on a vote that's happening next week. Members of the Latin Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences will be voting for the best Latin music of the past year. The winners will be announced at the 9th Annual Latin Grammy Awards. Latino USA's Beto Arcos reviewed some of this year's nominees for 2008.
One of the world's most revered alternative music figures, Manu Chao, is nominated with his album La Radiolina for Best Alternative Album. This new record continues the fusion of music and social politics that he's known for. The song Me Llaman Calle is a tribute to women sex workers and has been nominated in the Best Short Music Video category.
La soledad es un paso firme que no he podido.
In the Best Alternative Song category, there are three contenders equally deserving of the award. The song Normal by Mexico's newcomer Jimena Sariñana, who is also nominated in the Best New Artist and Producer of the Year categories.
Oh, y qué felicidad hacerte la cena. Y qué seguridad saber que me esperas y el tiempo pasará, el sol se apagará y todo lo que sentiste fue dormir.
Argentina's Bajo Fondo with the song El Mareo featuring Gustavo Cerati. And Spain's Chambao with the song Papeles Mojados, a song that addresses the plight of African immigrants who cross the Mediterranean Sea in search of a better life in Europe. Among the nominees in the Best Instrumental Album category, the one that stands out is the first live recording by the legendary Cuban pianist Bebo Valdez, accompanied by bassist Javier Colina. Live at the Village Vanguard showcases the 86-year-old Valdez at his finest, in a deeply lyrical mode, interpreting classics, including this soulful bolero, Tres Palabras. Unlike the main Grammy Awards, the Latin Grammy Academy nominates great music from around the world that may not be well known in the United States. Take, for instance, Diego Amador, a young pianist, heir to a major flamenco dynasty. His new album, Rio de los Canasteros, is nominated for a Best Flamenco Album. Equally deserving is the work of saxophonist David Sanchez, whose record Cultural Survival is nominated for Best Latin Jazz Album. Calling this a Latin jazz record doesn't capture its depth. It's an album with the most heartfelt message by one of the most talented and sought-after musicians working in today's international jazz scene. But among all the nominees in this year's Latin Grammys, an album that deserves not one, but several awards is Fiesta by Gustavo Dudamel, conducting the Simón Bolívar Youth Orchestra of Venezuela. Fiesta is a showcase of Latin American classical composers from Argentina, Venezuela, and Mexico. One of the pieces included in the album is Danzón Número 2 by the Mexican composer Arturo Márquez. Gustavo Dudamel's Fiesta, in my humble opinion, shouldn't only be considered the best classical album, but the album and record of the year. The reason is as compelling as it is exciting. No other album brings together the elements that make music so important in our lives. And this year's Latin Grammy nominations are a reminder that good music is alive and well in many parts of Latin America. We just need to open our hearts and listen. For Latino USA, this is Beto Arcos.
And for this week, this has been Latino USA. Thanks for listening. We had help this week from Jorge Olivares, Lily Percy, and Robert Frazier. To listen to our podcasts, go to latinousa.org or look for us on iTunes. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, the University of Texas at Austin, the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio, and the Marguerite Casey Foundation. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR is provided by the Department of Homeland Security, offering E-Verify, confirming the legal working status of new hires, at dhs.gov/e-verify. By Lumber Liquidators, Hardwood, Bamboo, and Cork Flooring, catalog at 1-800-FLOORING. And by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting community health leaders who make a difference in America's neighborhoods, on the web at communityhealthleaders.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.